Welcome back, Tiger fans, to Rock'em Nation's Football Podcast. I'm Nate Edwards. That's Brandon BK Kiley. This is Before the Box Score. It is a podcasting law etched in stone from the very first podcast of all time. The law is that if there is breaking news, it happens the second you stop recording. And for some reason, the podcasting gods have smiled upon us because the breaking news in Mizzouland happened 6 hours before we were supposed to record. So, BK, we're in rare territory. We're ready to rock about a big breaking story. How you doing, man?
Yeah, it turns out Steve Wilkes is kind and gentle and appreciates us small little podcasters on the outside. And he decided, hey, it's Wednesday. I know BK and Nate Edwards, they do their podcast on Wednesday nights to get out to the great people that are Mizzou football fans by Thursday morning. And you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to go ahead and announce that I'm leaving for a secondary coach position in the NFL on Wednesday afternoon, just so that way they can be prepared to talk about it on Wednesday. So, Steve Wilkes, I salute you. I appreciate you. Thank you, kind sir.
Tip of the cap, Steve. And good luck in your new place. But like, yeah, we're just going to dive right into it because it's what we've been talking about all afternoon. Steve Wilkes is out as Missouri's defensive coordinator. One season, weird season. Like I said earlier, I was talking to BK, maybe the worst defense we've ever seen paired with the most okayest defense we've ever seen in the same season. So very, very odd couple of games there for Coach Wilkes. He is going to join the Carolina Panthers where he had worked before. He's going to be their secondary coach, like BK said, joining Matt Rhule, former Baylor coach, the Baylor and Temple. Here's the thing about Steve. Eli Drinkwitz, you remember, you know, last year we heard stories that Eli Drinkwitz was begging Steve Wilkes to come out of his hidey hole and get it back into coaching and join him at Mizzou as a defensive coordinator. And it took some pulling, took some convincing, but he eventually did it. And now after, you know, one season, he's out. I don't know how much of that is, you know, this is what the college game is now, or, you know, he always wanted to get back into the NFL. But keep in mind, this dude has been in the coaching profession since 1995, at least. And in that entire time span, he has been at the college ranks, some form of the college ranks, 9 years, 10 years counting Missouri. So 1995 to 2021, only 10 of those stops were, or 10 of those years were at colleges. So like, this is an NFL dude. This is an NFL dude through and through. And I don't know how much of the, let's call it the current hiring culture around the NFL made this an opportunity to jump at it, or if he was always looking to get back and, you know, he was always in talks with it, but he is no longer Missouri's DC. Missouri will be looking elsewhere. And now he's back in the NFL, which maybe that's where he always was supposed to be. BK, when this broke, what was your first knee-jerk reaction?
I didn't really have a visceral reaction, and that's kind of what's weird about this, right? Like, normally when you have a coordinator, you have a strong feeling one way or the other on said coordinator. Like, it's very rare when you're a fan of a team and you're like, yeah, don't really have a strong opinion about my favorite team's coordinator. You typically are like, love him or hate him. Rarely is it somewhere in between. Mm-hmm. But for whatever reason, maybe it's just because of the way that this season went, I guess, I don't really have a strong position on Steve Wilkes as a coordinator. I was fine. I thought that he did basically the best that he could with the talent that he was given down the stretch after being an awful, awful defense, as you said, early on in the season. I also don't want to overstate just how good they were down the stretch, because it's not as if they were outstanding. They were better. They also gave up 265 yards through the air against Arkansas on 20 passing attempts. So, like, it's not as if they were amazing, but they improved, and the bar was so damn low for them earlier in the season that slight improvement was like, oh, wow. They're a real SEC defense now. And so that was enough for us to all believe that they had improved significantly. So I don't know, man. My moral of the story is I didn't really have a significant belief one way or the other on whether or not Steve Wilkes was like the answer, capital T, capital A, for Missouri's defense. And I still don't. And so today, as I saw the news that he was going to be moving on and going back to the NFL, it was kind of a, hey, good for Steve. I'm really interested to see what Missouri does next. And that was pretty much the extent of my reaction to it. Were you in line with that, or did you have a more visceral reaction when you saw that he was going to go elsewhere?
No, I mean, I tweeted out that Curb Your Enthusiasm gif. You're just like, yes, but no. And you just, it is because of the way the season went. Because halfway through the season, I put together a list of defense coordinators for no reason whatsoever, just to do it. Looking at other people out there and how much success they were having as compared to our poor little Tiger defense who couldn't, you know, stop a cold. And then magically the bye week hits, all of a sudden, everybody on the defense understands exactly what Steve Wilks wants to do. And they transform into a mediocre SEC defense. And because you had those two different things, that's why you have this reaction. Cause it's like, which one was it? What was that defense going to be this year? You're returning a ton of production, a lot of experience, plus some exciting transfers. Was it going to be the first half defense or the second half defense? And I think a lot of us were talking ourselves into thinking it would be the one that we saw to close the season, but we also saw that it wasn't that. So you're kind of like, we don't know what it was going to be. And we only had, you know, 13 games to gauge this guy. So you just don't know. You don't know. If they had just sucked ass like the entire season, fine, go. We're fine. If they had been okay all season, you're like, well, that, you know, whatever. So because you don't know, it's tough to make a reasonable reaction to this. And so I think I'm just going to be neutral. This is going to be a stopgap year. Hopefully the one in between where Drinkwitz found his forever defensive coordinator, because we're not going to be on the third DC in 3 years. But I'm just neutral about it. I'm more going to base my reaction based off of who the new guy is and how that guy does with the pieces that come back. That's going to ultimately decide whether I feel good about Wilks leaving or bad.
And that's kind of where I'm at as well. It's like, this is... I will say this too. I think this probably is important to mention here. I think it became clear today that Steve Wilks was going to go to the NFL at some point, whether it was this year or after next year. And if he wanted to get back into the NFL and that was his plan, I'm glad he did it now, because Missouri can now finally have, hopefully, some stability on that side of the ball, because they have lacked it in a big way since Eli Drinkwitz took over. You have the year one where you're like, okay, we're going to stick with this Ryan Walters thing. Everybody kind of understands that this is an arranged marriage and it's not going to last. So let's just get through this year. Everybody put on their best faces and then we'll move on. That's exactly how it went. And then they decided to go with Steve Wilks, and it was like, okay, it's an outside the box hire, but this is a guy that has head coaching experience, not in college football, in the NFL. And he's considered to be a really good defensive coordinator, or certainly at least a position coach in the NFL. Yeah, maybe this could work. But the dude hasn't been in college football in like 20 years. I don't know if it's going to work. It might, and the ceiling's really high, but the floor's really low. And we saw exactly that play out last year. I think what you're going to see next is more of your typical college football defensive coordinator hire. Like, my assumption, and I think we're on the same page here, is that Blake Baker, safeties coach who was with the linebackers coach for LSU last year, previously the defensive coordinator at Miami and before that Louisiana Tech. I assume that he's going to be the guy. Eli Drinkwitz said, a couple of weeks ago now, hey, when we hired Blake Baker, we did so with the understanding he's kind of going to be the number two on that side of the ball. That's not a statement he's made about literally any other coach that he's hired at any point in time. And that felt pretty significant then, and it feels even more significant now that he did so. So I'm assuming he's going to be your next defensive coordinator. He has experience doing that at a Power 5 level. He, depending on who you listen to, whether it's Miami fans or, you know, literally anybody else, did a pretty good job as that, and did a really good job last year, according to those that covered him at LSU. So I'm kind of excited to see what that means. And I think that whether it was now or after next year, I think this was coming, and it was just a matter of when, not if.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the Ryan Walters thing, that was both parties. You know, Eli wanted his guys, and Ryan Walters saw the defensive roster and went, "Oh, I'm going to get fired if I stay here." Mm-hmm. So that is fine. That was never going to last a second year. So some people are like, "Well, you know, he shot himself in the foot by getting rid of Walters." Nope, no, that was just always going to happen. It is weird that, despite him knowing that he wanted Steve Wilkes of all guys to come there, it makes you wonder where Coach Wilkes was on his list of, you know, was he the first? Was he the 31st? We don't know. But it sounded like that's the guy that Eli Drinkwitz really, really wanted. So that's kind of weird. And now we're in a situation where he's going to have to make another hire. You know, the Blake Baker hire, which I think happened the day after we recorded last time, was a good one. Obviously, he's an experienced piece, and, you know, he's got coordinating experience. So I was good with it as just like the positional coach. Defensive coordinator is going to be a little bit interesting, though. And then we're talking about this not like it's final. We don't know if Baker's going to be the guy. It makes the most sense, though. It's way easier to hire another safeties coach than it is to hire a defensive coordinator. But Blake Baker, I first heard this name when he was at Louisiana Tech, and I really liked those Bulldog defenses because he blitzed a ton. Now, when you blitz a lot, what happens? Well, we saw that this past year with Blaze Aldrich. You either blow it up or you get blown up. And, you know, Baker's last Tech defense, this is the one where he finally built it to what he wanted. They were terrible against the run, excellent against the pass. What's that sound like? And they blew stuff up. Blitz down success rate, they're top 10 in the country. Blitz down sack rate, they got sacks 12% of the time on their blitz downs, which is 25th in the country. Like, they rushed you and they hit you. Now, they weren't very good in the red zone, and they weren't very good at stopping the run, like I said, but this is also a G5 defense. He knew what his limitations were, and he said, screw it, we're going to just go out guns a-blazing. That got him the Miami job, though, with Manny Diaz. And at Miami, it was a little bit different. They didn't blitz nearly as much. I think they're one of the worst blitzing teams as far as frequency goes. Yeah, 101st in the country. But they were excellent against the run. They were excellent against the pass, just by playing kind of like a shell defense. They're very good at standard downs, pretty good at passing downs. Still not the best in the red zone, but they got you off the field on third down. So, like, it's tough to figure out kind of what he wants to do. When he doesn't have talent, he likes to roll the dice. When he does have talent, he has seemingly played it pretty safe. How much of that is the head coach he's working for? Unclear. But we've seen him do both. And, you know, kind of what we were talking about last show, the X's and O's need to be determined by your Jimmys and Joes. And it seems like right now, at least historically, Coach Baker has done really well tailoring the defense to the guys he has. So that encourages me, especially with this returning production, that he's going to go, okay, here's what we do well, and we're going to do the defense like that. And that's the mark of a good defensive coordinator, but also a good college defensive coordinator who can communicate that and get college kids to respond, which that's probably what we need in 2022.
Yeah, that's the biggest thing, is if you're looking for one thing that can change. I mean, the thing that was so frustrating about last year is it's not as if the personnel changed significantly from the beginning of the year to the end of the year for Mizzou. It was just the execution that changed. And I don't know if that's because, for whatever reason, the players just started playing better, or if they had a greater understanding of what the scheme was trying to accomplish. I'm not sure exactly what it was that clicked for them. And again, I don't want to overstate just how much it did click for them. But by the end of the season, something was going better than it was at the beginning of the year. And if you're going to be able to have a guy like a Blake Baker, for example, who has been in these situations before, has for the last decade really been around college football, I do think that that can help you. I do think that is something that can work a little bit better than it did with Eli Drinkwitz. And as much as they've got a lot of guys coming back on that side of the ball, they've also got a decent number of transfers on that side of the football. Mm-hmm. So it's mm-hmm. not as if you've got a ton of camaraderie where you're like, okay, cool, we can just go ahead and run this bad boy back and we've got the scheme up and running. You're going to have to teach that to mm-hmm. other guys again. So whether it was the guys that were returning having a greater understanding, or the guys that are coming in that you've got to be able to teach it to, there was going to be a learning curve regardless of if you had a new defensive coordinator or the old one. The other thing is, and I've seen a lot of people questioning, like, are they going to run a 3-4? Are they going to run a 4-3? Are they going to run a 4-2-5? That's like the least important questions to be asking. Most of these teams will figure that out based on their personnel. Like, the truth is, the difference between a 4-3 and a 3-4 is how many of those guys on the edge are standing up. Like, you're not going to put a different player on the field. You're probably going to have two pretty darn good linebackers in the middle and a couple of good edge rushers, regardless of if you're running a 3-4 or a 4-3. The truth is, most teams are running some iteration of a 4-2-5 because everybody is a nickel all of the time now. So you're going to have that extra defensive back, and some guys like that to be a safety. Other coaches like that to be a corner. Last year, Missouri was running a lot of nickel with Chris Abrams Drain as the quote unquote nickel slot corner. I'll be very curious to see how they decided to go about that this year. That's like the biggest change that I think you might see this year. But I kind of think that because of the personnel they have, and Chris Abrams-Drain had a pretty good season, they'll probably just keep it pretty similar. And then it comes down to blitz versus stand back, and do you play zone versus man? And that's kind of the biggest differences that you see in the SEC. So I'll be curious to see those differences for Blake Baker, but I just have a weird feeling he's probably going to play a decent amount of zone. He's going to blitz a lot, and we're going to see how that works.
Yeah. Yeah. Personnel and scheme, you know, in the NFL, if you want to run a 3-4, you need like a dreadnought class defensive tackle that's, you know, 6'3", 350 pounds to plug up the middle. And in college, you don't really need that. You need your best players out there. And so you figure out who your best players are and how to get as many of them on the field as possible. And if that means if you have a lighter defensive tackle in the middle, so what? Okay. Army and Navy run a 3-4. They're some of the smallest guys in college football. It doesn't really matter. You're going to figure out how to get what you want to do the best done. And then if that's a 3-4 with, you know, a standing edge rusher, or a 4-3 when they're got their hand in the dirt, okay, whatever. So I'm with you on that. I think the scheme talk is more just like, it's exciting because it's like opening a present on Christmas Day.
Oh, sure. Yeah, I get it.
But like, it's not nearly as important as we think it is. So it'll be interesting, and we'll get a little bit of that in the spring training. I remember going into 2020 around March or April, because I checked the MU roster almost every day. At some point after, right before the spring game, they had switched about six or seven guys listed as defensive linemen to edge. One of them was Trey Williams. I think the other one was what was the other one? They switched a bunch of them and they just called him Edge. And so we all got really excited that they were going to like a 3-4, and they ended up just doing exactly what they were always doing. They just had, they just kind of switched up. One guy was good, had a different title, and that was it. So, but we'll see. It's always fun to kind of prognosticate, and you got 9 months to figure it out. So, we'll see, but they got to make the hire first. And like I said, it's way easier to hire a safeties coach than a defensive coordinator. Obviously, if Coach Drinkwitz, if you're listening to this, the list is on rockandnation.com. I tweeted it out last night. You can take a look at the guys that I would go with. But, you know, here's what we do know. Steve Wilks made $800,000 last year. He was slated to make $1 million this year, which he would have been the second highest paid Missouri assistant of all time behind Derek Dooley, believe it or not. So Missouri's got the money, is my point. And because Coach Wilks is leaving for an NFL job, the language in his contract says that Missouri doesn't owe him anything. So we've got $1 million to play with. You know, you can throw that around. I think Derek Mason took a $400,000 pay cut to leave Auburn for Oklahoma State. So like, he's only making $1 million. That's kind of the caliber of what we're talking about here. I don't know if that's what they want to go with, or if they want a super cheap DC with Baker, give him, you know, an extra, I don't know, 50,000 and call it a day. There are names out there. There are options out there. Here's just a random question for you, BK. is there a college defensive coordinator that you would like to see at Mizzou? Or are you just kind of like, I don't know anybody well enough and I'm just good with Blake?
Yeah, kind of the latter. I would go with Blake, and I think that's going to be the way that they decide to go. I will give you a name, though, as a secondary coach that could be of interest. Now, I don't think this is likely because he just landed somewhere else this offseason. So it seems rather unlikely, although, hey, man, with the way the coaching changes are happening right now, who knows? It could be possible if Missouri throws enough money his way. So a gentleman by the name of Julius Brown, he's the cornerbacks coach now for Washington. He was hired there this offseason. But guess what staff he was on back in 2013? The staff that Eli Drinkwitz likes to reference.
Arkansas
he was
State,
indeed
baby.
At Arkansas State, where he coached cornerbacks and nickels and had that beautiful, flashy title of recruiting coordinator. He was also recruiting coordinator and defensive backs coach at Boise State, where Eli Drinkwitz happened to be in 2014 and 2015. And then over the last few years, he's had experience at Utah State, Texas Tech, and then Fresno State, all of which where he was significantly important in their recruiting, including last year with Fresno State, where he was once again their recruiting coordinator. And he's had a lot of time coaching in the secondary, whether that be the safeties, DBs, overall, cornerbacks. He's done it all. If you're going to go get a guy who seemingly is a really good recruiter, and I mean really good recruiter, this would be one of them. He would be of interest to me. And the biggest thing is he has that connection with Eli Drinkwitz, where they coached together for almost a 5-year stretch, 3-4 year stretch. I would be interested in giving him a look. And that seems at least not totally outside the realm of possibility, although he did get a job elsewhere.
Sure.
Yep. He also has a nickname, Juice, which Blake I Baker. Like.
Oh, God, hell yeah. Coach Juice. We had a coach break. We never did a coach Juice. Blake Baker, 2013, yep. Arkansas State. He was a safeties coach. So that's just the common thread with these guys for the most part, which is, yes, that's where you make your networking when you're a graduate assistant. That's one of the big things you got to be doing. So not a huge surprise. But, yeah, I mean, Steve Wilkes wasn't the lead recruiter on any guy that we've gotten. I think he might have come in to, you know, chat with mom and dad or maybe talk about scheme and stuff like that, but he was not.
DJ Smith is their lead recruiter on the defensive side.
Basically, it's DJ Smith. And Al Davis has been putting in a lot of work, too. So
it seems like Blake Baker might be really involved with some of these transfers. Like, I'm just judging based on social media, but he seems to be the guy that's been very heavily involved in the defensive transfer situation.
He's a connected dude.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, for as few stops as he's had, he clearly knows a lot of kids, which is awesome. You're going to be looking at him to kind of work those connections as well.
What about you? Do you have a name going back to your question for me? Do you have a defensive coordinator that, like, set money aside for a moment? Money is no object. You can go out there and offer the world to them. Who would you want to be Missouri's defensive coordinator in 2022 within at least some realism?
Oh, geez. I mean, I would have taken Derek Mason.
Well, yeah.
You know, especially since he was looking to get out of Auburn. So the timing didn't work out very well. But clearly we had the money for it. Now we know we have the money for it since he was willing to take almost a $500,000 cut just to get out. I'm kind of going back to the list, that I wrote in the middle of last season, and then, you know, retweeted, I would take like a William Inge from Fresno State. He is a pretty good recruiter as well. Also super cheap. But he is very similar. Like, it's a good passing defense, and they're pretty good in the red zone. I would have gone with him. If you want to get super funky, take Kurt Maddox out of San Diego State, 'cause he runs a 3-3-5.
Nope.
But I know what I really wanted is Kane Womack, who's South Alabama's head coach. He's making $700,000 right now. And he not only made Indiana a good defensive team, but then made South Alabama a good defensive team last year. That would be my ultimate pick. I mean, you're asking him to take a DC chair again, since he's been a head coach, so he probably doesn't want to do that. But I would go with either him or like Rod Wright out of UTSA, because they were excellent at stopping big plays and really havoc focused, but they also didn't miss tackles, which that was a problem last year too.
Weren't you a big David Reeves names. Guy?
Yes, I do like him. I think he just signed like a very long contract, though.
Like, that's okay.
I mean, does that stop anything? No, not anymore. But like, I would take him too. I would take him too.
And for people that are listening, they're like, who is David Reeves and why are we bringing him up? He is the defensive coordinator at UAB who just creates havoc like no other business.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, UAB, Casey Woods, he was on that staff. Mm-hmm. They brought in a lot of good kids, a lot of good defensive kids. When that program got shut down, I think three of them became all conference in a Power Five conference. Like they know what they're doing out there. So, yeah, I mean, I don't think, you know, I'm entertaining these ideas, but I'm with you. I don't think Drinkwitz is going to do that. I think he's going to just bump Baker up and then get a secondary coach. And I think that's fine. But at the same time, he's made a ton of defensive hires in his, you know, 2.5 years on the job. It kind of makes you wonder, does he know what he wants on defense? And can he hire the guys who can do that? You know, I saw on Reddit, and I don't remember the user, but they were talking about Steve Wilkes leaving and like who was going to take over. And someone's like, Eli Drinkwitz is going to become Missouri's defensive coordinator too. But like, it is fair to question if he knows what he wants on defense and he can find a guy to do it. Because he only had to make one hire at App State, and most of the hires that he's made so far haven't really worked out. Jethro Franklin, terrible. Steve Wilkes is gone. I mean, you don't look at the Odom guys, but like, you know, Aaron Fletcher, you know, he's gone. Lateral move. That's kind of the weirdest one. And like, other than DJ Smith, you really haven't seen a lot of continuity on that side. So, I mean, is that just coming up with a question to fill in the gap in the offseason, or is this an actual issue that we should think about as far as Drinkwitz's hiring ability?
It's a question, and it's a fair one at this point in time. I do think that it is interesting that most of this is coming on the defensive side of the ball. And we've talked about this in the past. Like, I think that makes me feel better about it, but I don't know if that's me telling myself a story, you know, where like, does it matter that it's on the opposite side of the ball from the one that he is actually in charge of? Maybe not. But in my own head, the story that I am telling myself is that if this was an offensive issue, if he was losing offensive line coaches and receiver coaches and quarterbacks coaches and all of these different things to other teams every offseason, okay, he's probably too intimately involved with that side of the ball, and he is a micromanager. And that would be the story that I would tell myself on that side of the ball. On the other side of the ball, man, I think he kind of handed that thing off. I think that was legitimately Steve Wilkes' side of the ball. And he mentioned previously, like, hey, you know, this offseason, because I was able to hand off some of my quarterback coaching duties to another member of the staff, like, I was able to go into a defensive line meeting. And that's not something I've been able to do the first couple of years. Like, I think that tells you just how laissez-faire he is with the handling of the defense. And I don't think that's inherently a bad thing. I think that's how a lot of coaches are. But that tells you which side of the ball that he's really involved with. And that just makes me think, like, these other coaches, this is kind of how college football works now. And until he's able to get a strong staff of loyal coaches, I think that you're going to continue seeing it. I just think that's kind of the way that things are trending.
Yeah. I'm 100% okay with him washing his hands of the defense and basically holding the coordinator responsible and saying that's your team. This is my team. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm going to chew you out if you screw it up, but like, I'm going to let you be the captain of your own ship. Just don't crash it in the rocks. I think that's totally fine. You know, college football, like you were talking about, is not the same as it used to be. You are much, as a head coach, you are much less involved in the day-to-day planning, management of the team, and more kind of just the CEO. You're the face of the corporation. You're out there shaking hands, kissing babies, driving dump trucks to high schools. You know, that is your role as the head coach, and you got to let everyone else kind of do their own thing. You know, when Shane Beamer was hired at South Carolina, a lot of people were like, what you're hiring Oklahoma's tight ends coach? Has never coordinated anything, never really been anywhere close to the head coaching position. What is Shane Beamer really good at? He's mobbed up. He's mobbed up in the SEC. He knows everybody. He is a well-connected dude. Yeah, maybe he can't, you know, do an X's and O's for the offensive or defensive side, but he hires guys that know how to do that. He hires recruiters who can bring in the good kids, and he just manages those people. He manages those 10 people. You know, look at Brian Harsin at Auburn. That mess that's going on. Well, you know, Gus Malzahn was pushed out by Auburn because he was, you know, a little aloof. Boosters didn't like him. So what do? They brought in a hard-nosed football guy. Yeah, I'm a football coach. I'm not gonna do any of this other crap. I'm gonna fix this by being a football coach. Well, what did he do? Well, he pissed off Cadillac Williams, which I feel like he shouldn't do. He refused to go to Bo Jackson's golfing tournament. I'm not an Auburn guy, but I know you got to do that. He basically didn't let any media talk to him. He just shut the whole thing down and said, I'm going to out football all these problems. And now he's probably going to get fired. You've got to be a manager of people. You got to be a manager of your coaching staff. And I think really it would be a really good move for Drinkwitz to hire an offensive coordinator. Not my call. That's what he wants to do. But I feel like the effective college head football coaches right now are the CEO type, much like Mack Brown made popular in the early 2000s. And the more you can do on the periphery, on the outside, with, you know, the forward facing, the public facing portion of your program, and leaving all that other football stuff to football dudes who don't have to worry about that. In my opinion, that's the best way to have a healthy program.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you. And that's why, like, man, this is a really big hire for Eli Drinkwitz. Like, whether he goes with Blake Baker or if he decides to go with somebody else, and I just firmly believe it's going to be Baker. I think he was brought in here with the understanding that whether it be now or next year, it was going to be his time to be Missouri's defensive coordinator. So let's operate under that assumption for a moment. He better be right. You know, this kind of feels like the Derek Dooley hire for Barry Odom. Now, it's different because I think Eli Drinkwitz is under less pressure right now. I think he has done more to gain the trust of this fan base than Barry Odom had at that point in time. But when he made the hire of Derek Dooley, everybody kind of knew, OK, you're either sinking or swimming with Dooley as your OC. And he was wrong and it didn't work. And the result was he got fired because his offense wasn't good enough and he wasn't able to make up for the mistakes that he made on the recruiting trail. For Drinkwitz, I mean, first of all, you got to get the quarterback right. We know that. But on the defensive side of the ball, you've been lacking now for 3 years, really. You need to get that right. And a defensive coordinator hire, if you're able to knock it out of the park, if Blake Baker is good, if he was just in a bad situation at Miami and you find out, oh, damn, we've got ourselves a really good football coach here who is an excellent coordinator and is a great recruiter. And oh, by the way, is what, 38 years old and has a ton of energy. Like, as you mentioned, super connected within this area of the country. Like, OK, if this hits, it could hit at a really high level, but you better be right.
He is the same age as Eli Drinkwitz. They both graduated from college in 2004. However old that makes you feel, you are correct. You are old. It's good to go young. Steve Wilks was one of the oldest guys on the staff last year. He and Jethro Franklin. Bye-bye. They're gone.
This is a really young staff, top to bottom now.
It is super young, and that's good. I guess real quick, Curtis Looper's old, but...
But he also has some infectious energy, man. I love Looper.
He does. And he's a recruiting king. Mm-hmm. I was thinking the other day, like, who are the most indispensable assistants on this staff? And Casey Woods would have been up there, but he took a promotion at SMU, which is fine. Mm-hmm. So right now I think my power ranking 1, 2, 3, as far as like, I don't want them to leave / this team will be worse off if they leave. Number one with a bullet, Curtis Looper. Number two, Marcus Johnson. Yep. And number three, now that Bush Hamden is the quarterbacks guy instead of Drinkwitz, I feel like that's really important. But I don't have any proof that that's the case. So I'm going to say DJ Smith because he's a recruiting coordinator now and he's super young. What do you think?
I would probably, I agree with your 1-2. I think that's correct.
Oh, what about Eric Link? Because that dude, he is coordinating some special teams. He is saving our bacon.
Yeah, he's done a really good job with it for what it's worth. But from what I understand, he's kind of like they've been splitting that up more than the coordinator tab would lead you to believe.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So he's technically in charge of it. So he gets the credit and he deserves it. But I think that each of the coaches kind of takes on a little piece of the special teams. So that
sure,
I wouldn't have him up there. I think the third option is either Baker or DJ Smith. I think the clear top two, and I could understand if you had Marcus Johnson, honestly, at number one, but I think the clear top two are Marcus Johnson and Looper. And then third is a battle between Baker and Smith.
Okay. Yeah.
I might go Baker, honestly, just because if they believe what he's done yet, I know, but if they believe in him enough to where he's getting the DC job, like that, that is pretty telling in my mind.
No, I agree. I agree. I don't know what the time frame on this hire is going to be. I don't. If it comes fast, then it's going to be Baker. If it's
spring practice is starting up soon, right?
I know, it's a couple of weeks. So like, if we hear quickly, then it's probably going to be Baker. If this gets drawn out more than a couple of weeks, then they're looking on the outside, and that's going to be weird. But whatever. So yeah, we'll find out.
Do you have the date for the open of spring football? I know last year it was February like 26th. Do you know what it is this year? And I'm putting you on the spot here, but I was just curious if you knew.
I don't know. See, everything from 2021, but we don't have anything for 22.
Okay. So my guess is it's probably sometime in March. In the next 2 weeks or so. Because last year it was, like I said, like late February, February 26th. So if that's what it is, like, you're going to know soon, regardless of who it is. They're not going into spring ball without a DC. I would be very surprised. Stupid.
Yeah. So
I bet you next time we're podcasting, they will have a defensive coordinator announced.
Okay.
Regardless of if it's internal or external.
I like that take.
Yeah.
Well, we'll find out. Who knows? Maybe it comes tomorrow because, yeah, all the big stuff happens the day after we record, except for this one. So we'll see. But yeah, so we got some staff churn. That'll be interesting. We also went through a whole ass signing day, but I wanted to break it down. We'll do the babies later. Let's talk about the transfers first, because we got some awesome transfers. I mentioned Auburn earlier in that mess. They were losing like 20 guys in the portal and replaced eight. So like, Auburn's always really good when you count them out, but ooh, it's not looking very good right now. But anyway, we've got some transfers in. One of them is Ian Matthews, a former defensive lineman at Auburn who did not play last year. So he's taking his redshirt year. He's got 4 years to play four. Or I guess technically 5 years. Nope, 4 years to play four. No, I'm right. And then we added Tyler Stevens to the tight end room. And really, I think maybe your favorite of the transfers so far, Tyron.
Ooh, Hopper, baby.
Cousin of Tyrone from Florida. So I'll let you kind of address these in whatever order you want, but I want you to talk about the transfer at the top of your mind right now and how they're going to make an impact for next year's team.
Can I go from least interesting to most interesting in my mind? Is that way we can end with a bang? Okay, so this Tyler Stevens cat, he's fine. Like, just expect Messiah Swenson.
He's Nico Hay, basically the same numbers.
Yeah, kind of. Like, he goes about it in a little different ways. He's more long and lanky and might be a little bit more of an over-the-top type of a player, but he didn't do a whole lot at Buffalo. So I think he's just a guy. I would be surprised if he's getting more playing time this year than Ryan Horsecamp. Let's put it that way. And that's all right. That is not me being a homer with Horsecamp, although maybe that is just my legit evaluation of what I saw from him off of the 5 minutes of tape that I was able to find on Buffalo's tight end. He's perfectly fine, and they needed to add a tight end, so it makes sense that they went out and got one, and this was the guy that was available, and he played, and he produced at a perfectly adequate level last year, and I expect that to be the case for Missouri as well. Do you have any thoughts on one Tyler Stevens?
He better not take snaps away from my boy's horse whips, because that's what I really want, but you did need an experienced guy. You can't have three freshman tight ends and expect to have it, you know, in kind of any effective scheme using them. So I am fine with it. Like I said, if he was on last year's team, he and Nico Hay would have been tied for targets and yards. So that's basically what you're getting. Like you said, it's a little bit different, but from a production standpoint, almost the exact same as Hay. So if you lose a Hay, you add a Hay, I'm good with it.
I like the way you put that. Next one, Ian Matthews, lottery ticket, baby. You got a talented defensive lineman who's going to play along the interior. He's kind of got that Akale Byers type of a vibe to him. Like, could he play defensive end? Maybe. Is he probably more of an interior player? Definitely. And that's kind of the way that we're going about this bad boy. I don't expect him to see the field a whole lot this year. I think that Eli Drinkwitz made note of that, where he's like, hey, a lot of these guys that you bring in, when you're going to the transfer portal, it's probably to get an immediate impact, unless you're Ian Matthews, mm-hmm. in which case we don't necessarily believe that you're going to see the field right away, but they do believe in the talent, and it's a lottery ticket that they could go out there and acquire, and they feel good about it. If you were somebody that Auburn and Arkansas and Florida State and South Carolina all viewed as being worthy of an addition last year, yeah, why not? Go ahead and add it to the defensive line. Let's see what you can do.
I think that's the biggest thing. That a lot of SEC teams wanted this guy, and he wanted out at any cost. If you have been paying any attention to the acidic Twitter exchanges between Auburn players, whether Harsin is a jerk or not, Matthews was liking all the ones that said he was a jerk, so he wanted out big time. If he's looking to flee and we had a spot, like, and a bunch of teams wanted him, then I am good with him on the team. We'll figure out interior, exterior, whatever, edge rusher, you know, three technique. I don't care. He is a talented dude. A lot of teams wanted him, and he's got technically 4 years to play. So that's a plus.
He played a little tight end in high school. I watched a little video of him catching passes, and he scored touchdowns. All right. So
put him out.
He's an athletic guy, but yeah, he's the type of player. They took another one at cornerback, Drayden. I forget his last name.
Norwood.
Similar type of a thing where it was like, hey, let's bet on this talent because he might end up becoming something. This is even more of a sure thing than Norwood is. Like, I don't know if he can play corner or not. He was a quarterback in college, so it's just impossible to know. But yeah, the talent, he was super fast, super athletic. Let's find out if he can play the position. And this is more of a, hey, he's probably going to be a pretty good player. It just might take some time. So let's get him in there. Let him work with Al Davis. Let him work with our defensive line coaches. And we'll see what we've got a year or two down the road. Okay.
Yeah.
Now for the fun one. Boy, howdy, Tyrone Hopper is fun. That guy can flat out play. And whether it be as a Viking Voyager, where he is just blitzing his ass off through the center of the line, or if he is going sideline to sideline and beating your offensive linemen to the spot, or identifying screens and blowing your running back's ass up in the backfield, he can do it all, man. This guy is really fun. He is the most athletic Missouri linebacker since probably Terez Hall, at least in terms of my immediate recall. And he plays kind of like Terez Hall. Like, he's out there and he is ready to hit you. His cousin, Tyrone, correct, is fine. And he's going to be like Chris Turner. This guy is like a souped up version of Blaze Aldridge. Like, what you thought Blaze Aldridge might be, Tyrone Hopper is that, and he's already done it in the SEC. This kid can play, man. Like, he, honest to God, he might be your best player on the defensive side of the ball next year. He is really good.
I didn't really think about it when he initially hit the portal and then when he committed. But, you know, Tyrone, I was like, okay, Tyrone Hopper. I was like, Florida. I went back and watched the Florida game from this past year. I remember where I heard the name. He was the dude who had 13 tackles on his
head
against Missouri last year. Now, only two were for loss, but like, he was everywhere. He was everywhere. And he was the one that was putting pressure constantly and forcing some really poor throws, which, you know, I mean, every Bazelak throw was a poor throw, but, you know, that's neither here nor there. He was aggressive and he was everywhere. So now, like, I remember kind of looking at his stats. I'm like, he's kind of like just Blaze Aldridge again. But like you said, he was Blaze Aldridge in the SEC last year.
And he did it as a sophomore. Yeah. He was still really young.
Little kid.
He was a 2019 recruit, man. This kid has like a decent amount of eligibility remaining. And I don't know that he's going to exhaust it. I think he's an NFL player.
One and done or two undone?
Probably two.
Yeah.
If he has a great year, though, like, the way that he plays is a modern NFL linebacker. And that's why I think he can be in and contributing and ready to go right away. Like, you're going to have him and Chad Bailey on the field, and you've got the perfect duo at linebacker. Chad Bailey's more of a, like, your classic kind of thumping inside linebacker for the modern game. He's not like 250 pounds or anything where you're going to like have him run his face into a fullback 20 times a game. Like, that's not his role, but he can play it the way that the modern game is played. You have him on one side, you'll have Hopper on the other, and Hopper's just going to be running sideline to sideline. He's going to be your typical blitzing linebacker as well, whether it be against the run or the pass. He can do it all. I am super excited to see what the plans are that they have for Tyron Hopper.
I mean, we saw what Nick Bolton could do to a defense just by himself. Mm-hmm. You know, his threat to do anything that you wanted him to do made those later Odom defenses just excellent. Absolutely excellent. So, again, we're not saying, I'm not saying he's a Bolton. I'm not saying he's anything. I'm saying he's Tyron Hopper. We're just going to figure out, like, you know, the potential is there for a lot of fun. It's also going to be really interesting, and I've seen this bandied about a little bit, how they're going to do the equipment managers are going to do the names on the back of the jersey. Because you got Tyron and Tyrone. You know, my thought was like, oh, maybe they'll do it a middle initial. And then, like, we find out that they're both middle name is like Earl or something like that. It's like, well, you can't do T.E. Hopper. So I don't know how they're going to do it. Maybe one has an apostrophe, one doesn't. But like, it's a set, and Hopper the Elder is only here for a year. But yeah, the younger Hopper is.
Hey, Nate, they were numbers. So I think we'll differentiate that way.
Remember when Brad Smith was B.D. Smith? Yeah. BD Smith, and then Brian Smith was BN Smith. Like,
maybe they'll go, I know that TN was versus TE. Ago.
That'd work. Yeah. I like it. Well, that was the transfer additions. We also got two more high school kids who signed on signing day. Curtis Beegler and then Carmica Glass. Now, I know you did a deep dive on our newest offensive lineman. Do you want to start with him? And then
yeah, I did both of them this week, and you can read about them on rockmnation.com, the flagship. I really like both of these additions, man. I mean, they are, I don't want to get people too excited because they were available for a reason, right? They were like signing day additions, basically. But let's go based on that. If you were going to have two guys that were signing day additions, these are the kinds of players that you would like them to be. Pegler's listed at 6'5" and 340 pounds, and his huddle highlights are titled, quote, Pancakes for Days. And it is aptly titled Pancakes for Days. Yes. That is the correct way to describe what I witnessed for the 4.5 minutes that I watched him just destroying defensive linemen. Now, that being said, I don't know where he fits into the mix because you are suddenly really deep along the offensive line. And I don't know if Pegler, he's listed as a tackle. I don't know if his future is going to be at tackle or guard because he holds up better than you would expect in pass protection. Given his size, he's got pretty good feet. He almost kind of reminds me of like a tackle version of Trevor Sims, where it's like, okay, this doesn't look like it should work, but it does repeatedly. And he just always seems to get the job done. That's kind of Curtis Beegler, but on the high school level. So I don't know where he fits in positionally, but that's something they'll have to just kind of figure out over the next year or two. He also doesn't,
you know who he reminded me of actually watching kind of like his high school and like early years, Larry Borum.
Yep. That's who I consulted.
Larry Borum came in big, big boy.
Yep.
And like they put him on the inside and like that really wasn't his, he was good, but it really wasn't his jam. And then they bounced him on the outside and then, well, now he's in the NFL.
I love that you said that because that was my comp for him.
That's awesome.
He was 6'6", 335 pounds when he arrived at Mizzou in 2017. And Larry Borum ended up being a really good player, like you said, at tackle. I think that's probably the best spot for Curtis Beegler long term, but they have so many guys there, man. Hyron White, Javon Foster, Zeke Powell, Connor Wood, Connor Tolleson, Bobby Lawrence, Valen Erickson, who they just added this year as well. And then you get to Curtis Beegler. It's just going to be a uphill climb for him. So I don't know if or when he will actually see the field for Mizzou, but this is the kind of bet that you make on signing day when you've got a scholarship available. Go get the dude that's really mean and really big and puts everybody on their back whenever they were blocking them. And oh, by the way, he was in the whatever their all-star game is down in Alabama. And he apparently just totally dominated that thing. And this is going up against like the best players in the state. So he's done it against high level competition. I don't think you're going to see him in the next couple of seasons, but keep his name in the back of your mind, because I do think he's somebody that we'll eventually hear from.
Yeah, for sure. So anyway, I mean, I think anytime you look at an offensive line, especially at the SEC, you got to make sure that you have depth. And we don't know the quality of the depth right now, but boy, howdy, do we have the depth. Like, I think it's 18 dudes right now.
Yeah.
And, you know, other than White and Foster, like, they all have multiple years to play.
Remember the last, remember 2019? No, 2020.
Yeah.
When it was like, dude, are they going to have enough offensive linemen to play? They were hemorrhaging offensive linemen. And now they have added to the point where it's like, oh, they've really leveled out the classes. All of them are spread out. They have guys that can play with position versatility. It's like, oh, okay, this is all kind of working in a way that makes sense to me now suddenly.
Yeah, it's the most perfectly balanced class, position by class that you can possibly find. It's like 3-4, 3-4. So that's good. Hey, we don't know what he's going to be. He doesn't have to be anything, though. He can just get his feet under him, hit the gun club, put the right weight on, get in a good spot as far as operating college, and then he can compete. And if he gets to the top, even better. But there's certainly no pressure for someone signing this late and certainly, of his caliber. But there's, like you said, you're betting, you're buying low, and hopefully you can cash out when it's super high. What about this Carmichael Glass guy? Because like, another outside linebacker who might be an edge rusher is like, don't really need that, but like, this dude's kind of interesting. What did you think?
Yeah. So remember how I mentioned Tyron Hopper is kind of like a really rangy, athletic, long linebacker? Well, just apply all of that stuff, but to the high school version. And that's Carmichael Glass. He is a really interesting player. And this seems to be, in my opinion, a trend. You know how we talked in the past about how like, hey, if you're not 6'1", you probably aren't playing corner at Mizzou. It's kind of becoming that for Missouri with their linebackers as well. So you've got Hopper listed at 6'2", 225. Xavier Simmons, who was a freshman this year, also in the class, the other linebacker they took, 6'3", 215. And now you've got Glass, who's listed at 6'4", as a linebacker, and 210 pounds. So they're looking for long, rangy athletes at that position. All three they added this offseason fit that criteria. Now, Glass is a really interesting player because prior to the week of signing day, his offers were Houston Baptist, Lamar, McNeese State, and New Mexico. Not exactly a who's who of schools calling to be interested in him. But that doesn't really match up with the player that I watched. And it doesn't match up with the accolades that he received this year either. He was an all-state linebacker in the biggest classification of football in the state of Louisiana. And oh, by the way, he won defensive MVP honors in his district, which is a pretty darn good district. So I'm not sure why he went so under the radar. It's a little baffling to me. He's definitely slight. He needs to add a little bit more strength to his frame, but he is a heck of a player, man. He makes a lot of plays behind the line of scrimmage. He's kind of similar, once again, to a Blaze Aldridge, where it's like, hey, this guy could kind of blitz and he can go sideline to sideline. Like, he's more athletic than Aldridge, but he's in a similar vein to the way that he played. So I don't know when or if we will see him either. But again, another name to remember, and the type of guy that, like, I know this one comes to mind because it worked, but Charles Harris had all of the types of he had all of the attributes that you'd be looking for in a late addition to a signing class. And then he ended up, becoming a two-time all-SEC selection and then went in the first round of the NFL draft. I'm not saying Glass is going to be that, but he seems to have all of the criteria that you'd be looking for to be like, okay, this might work. And if it does, the upside for a player like this is much higher than it should be for somebody that you got the week of signing day.
So, when you look at someone who seems rated low, and I will agree, like, Glass pops. You know, we saw all the highlights, so we saw the good pop. That there's obviously going to be some bad pop too, but like, you notice him, and so you're like, well, what's the disconnect? There tends to be like three things that would lead to a player being underrated or kind of unknown. The first is, you know, you play in a really small town or like a remote area. you didn't play football until like, you know, your junior, maybe your senior year of high school, and then you didn't go to camps. And number two tends to go with number three pretty well. You know, Monroe, Louisiana is basically Southern Arkansas. Not the most populous place in the world. Obviously, you know, you played at the highest level in Louisiana, but all that Louisiana talent's in the South, right? You think New Orleans, you're thinking Baton Rouge. That's where they all kind of live, or kind of more towards the Texas side of the state. Monroe was very, very isolated. So there's a chance that just, you know, the college analyst didn't get out there, and he probably didn't do himself any favors by not going into camps. You know, if they can't see, if they can't evaluate you at those specific things, then, you know, they're going to just watch your tape and kind of probably rate you a little lower, just kind of based off of bias. But yeah, I mean, his high school team was good. He really showed out on a really good team, and he did it against good competition and a, you know, pretty football talented state. Again, he doesn't have to do anything immediately, but it's a very exciting addition. You know, Xavier Simmons and Carmichael Class, like you said, a lot of similar play, similar build. I'm excited for the linebacking future, and that's not something I could say at this time last year.
Yeah, and the other thing is, like, we just don't even know what to make of Zach Lovett or Damian Wilson. Those guys just really didn't see the field last year, right? And those are two other players that could potentially be in the pipeline. So I think, you know, next year, your starters are going to be Chad Bailey and Tyrone Hopper. I think that's probably going to be the case as well for 2023. Those two guys are likely two-year starters for you. And then it's a question of, okay, who takes over for them afterwards? And right now, I think you're going to see something like Xavier Simmons and Carmichael Glass are fighting for that spot that Hopper currently is situated in.
Oh, yeah.
And then Lovett and Wilson are the guys that could potentially take over for that Chad Bailey spot. And they could, that could change based on who they recruit or the transfer portal or whatever next year. But I think as it's currently situated, they seem to have like those two athletic guys could be behind Hopper, and the two guys that are more thumpers, Lovett and Wilson, they could be behind Bailey. So it is starting to make sense a little bit more. You can see the plan that is starting to formulate here. They've got a type at corner. They want long, rangy, athletic guys there. They want safeties that can play deep, or they can come down and hit you if they need them to. On the defensive line, they are looking for big dudes in the interior that can get disruption up front. And on the edge, they just want you to be able to fly off of the edge. So they've got types at these positions. And I think that's good, man. That shows you what the plan is, and that they're not just going out there and being like, okay, who's a 4-star that we could go out there and acquire? It is like a certain type of player that they're looking for.
Yeah. I mean, look at DJ Wesselak. Like, they knew they wanted that guy. He didn't play much in the fall because of the legal trouble that he had. But they knew that that was the skill set they wanted for an edge rusher. Mm-hmm. And then Wesselak literally got one shot at an All-American Bowl and tore it up and became a 4-star again. So, like, no, they're not chasing stars. They're chasing skills. And it just so happens that those skills tend to be very highly rated, and they're talented players, but they do have a plan. For our questioning of Drinkwitz's ability to hire the guys to, you know, execute the plan, he can certainly get the guys to be on the field. So it's encouraging to see that. And obviously, you know, you're stacking the depth here. We're going into year three of, you know, on-field product, which means we got two really highly rated classes that are in the books right now, plus some, you know, holdovers from the last regime. So you're starting to see the talent makeover kind of come to fruition. And good news, guys, the 2022 Missouri Football Tiger recruiting class ranked 17th by Rivals, 14th by the 24/7 composite, and 11th by ESPN. So no matter who you subscribe to, this is the greatest high school recruiting class in the history of Missouri football during the Rivals era. So that's pretty awesome, because we just had the greatest of all time. We followed it up with another of the greatest of all time. And then, in addition, Missouri's transfer portal additions, which only at this time, I think 24/7 is the one that does it right now, but they ranked that transfer portal crop as 13th best in the country. So no matter what you're looking at, if it's high schools, if it's high schoolers or transfers or putting them all together, Missouri just put a lot of talent on this team. Now, so did everybody else in the SEC. Okay. This doesn't really mean much right now, but you're starting to see a talent increase from what we've seen in the past years. And you stack a couple more classes like that, and all of a sudden we're recruiting in the middle of the pack, maybe top middle, and you can execute. This is how you build a quality SEC team. And it's very exciting to see. And I love the process. So I know I'm a weirdo, but like, dude, this is legitimately fun to watch. It takes some time, but this is a lot of fun.
No, it definitely is. And as you mentioned, like, the tough part is looking at where it ranks in the SEC, because you look at where Missouri's at, and this is going by the Rivals rankings, right? The top three ranking rated teams in the country were all SEC. 13 teams from the conference ranked among the top 27. So half of the top 27 classes were from the SEC. Colorado had the third best recruiting class in the Pac-12. They would have had the worst recruiting class. Yes, worse than Vanderbilt in the SEC. Miami, who had the fourth best recruiting class in the ACC, also would have been the worst in the SEC. So as much as Missouri, it was a great class, and it genuinely was. They were right towards the middle of the pack in the SEC, which is awesome. Like, compared to where you typically would expect them to be. Wow. Huge round of applause for what Eli Drinkwitz did. Now you got to stack them. Now you got to do it again. And that's what makes it hard in the SEC is awesome that you did it once. If you're not able to do it again and again and again, then you're going to be falling off. And that's how these other teams are able to get you, because those teams are going to be top 20 every year. Can Missouri back it up with another top 20 class? And by the way, 80% of the roster now Eli Drinkwitz guys that Eli Drinkwitz brought into the team, whether that be via the transfer portal or guys that he recruited to Missouri. So this is getting very close to truly being Eli Drinkwitz's vision for what the Missouri Tigers should be. It doesn't mean he needs to win a national championship this year, but we should start seeing something resembling the identity of what an Eli Drinkwitz team is this year.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, we're going to see Luther Burden on the field. Okay.
That sounds good. We're going to see Marquise. I like it when you talk about that.
I know. We're going to see Marquise Graciel on the field. Okay. So, like, I know that that's a little bit different. But the guys that are going to start breaking into the rotation, it's Kyren Montgomery. It's Travion Ford. Dalen Carnell. Arden Walker, Tyler Hibbler. This is the last class, not the one we just got, the one before that. And really, the guys who are going to be toward the top of the depth chart, Brady Cook, J.J. Hester, obviously, but Chris Abrams-Drain, maybe Drake Heismeyer figures in there, Jalen Carles, who's already getting the starting spot, Enes Rekstra. Those are the guys two classes ago who are going to be your starters. So, like, it's really easy to forget about some of these guys because you fall in love with the recruiting class and then you fall in love with the next one. But it does take some time for most of these guys to see the field. You'll see the depth chart kind of fill out with mostly Drinkwitz guys at this point. But recruiting wins don't necessarily equate wins on the field immediately, because it takes a couple of years to get them on there. Obviously, I mentioned a couple from this class that'll be on there, but this is going to be a baby team, very young baby team. That means they're going to be hella inconsistent. But again, fall in love with the process. Fall in love with the recruiting, the development. That's fun. It's fun to me to watch and see this team grow. And maybe in 2 years, we're looking back at maybe a 2019 team. But, you know, 2 years from now, maybe we're looking back at a 2013 team. And with the way they're stacking talent, and, you know, hopefully they can still execute and call good plans and manage the team well. But, like, yeah, the future is bright and I'm very excited.
Hey, man, the future is bright, Missouri Tigers. That's what this podcast should be named.
Whew. I like it. A little too late to rename the podcast, but you know what? We can make it the tagline. That's it. That's all I got. Any parting shots, BK?
I don't think so, man. Any predictions on who the next Missouri Tigers defensive coordinator will be?
Oh, all my money's on Blake Baker. But, you know, Drinkwitz has surprised us in the past, so I don't rule out an outside hire. But I think if you're a betting type and you want to make some money, put it on Baker and then call it a day.
If I set the over under, I'm with you. I think it'll be Blake Baker. Over under on February 16th, it being announced. Over is after, 16th. Under is before then.
So
today's the 9th. So 1 week from Wednesday.
Okay. He's going to do it on Valentine's Day to show his love. I'll take the under. What do you think?
I think it's under as well. I think you might see an announcement. Like, when people are listening to this, it wouldn't surprise me if he's already been announced.
Yeah. I mean, you kind of have to. You really have to. You know, you need to have a coordinator in place when you're hitting the recruiting trail, just flat out. So I'm with you on that. So, yeah. Hey, when you're listening to this, hello, future you. Tell us if we're right or not. I don't know. But I'll definitely take under the 16th, and we will find out shortly. And yeah, I feel pretty good that next show we'll be talking about the defensive coordinator hire and the possibilities for that and all the other stuff that's going to come with it. But that's going to be the show for today. As always, we appreciate the downloads and the subscriptions. Leave us a comment. Rate us on iTunes. We love all types of feedback from you guys. You can follow us on Twitter. I'm at Nate G. Edwards. He is at BK Sports Talk. Of course, you can follow the Rockin' Flagship at Rockin' Nation, and you can listen to BK on the radio in St. Louis, 101 ESPN. We appreciate you tuning in this time. We'll try to do better next time. And until then, MIZ.
Z-O-U. Well, I-